Jesus and his band continue on their way from Galilee to Jerusalem. After traveling south through Perea, the country east of the Jordan River, they have now turned west on the final leg of the journey. Crossing the ford of Jordan just outside Jericho, they come into the rich resort city of dates and palms and royal rose gardens. Passover is near, and crowds are thick on the roads. Caravans of camels and donkeys share space with religious pilgrims, local merchants, Roman soldiers, and the citizenry. At every entry of the city sits one of Rome's hated, the local tax collector, demanding his due for merchandise, crops, carts, animals, indeed for the privilege of living in the empire. Impatience mixes with sweat and dust and tropical heat. And somewhere in the crowd, a short, pushy man is making his way, trying vainly to dodge the angry elbows of those who recognize him. Of all the hated, Zacchaeus is chief, for these persistently prying tax collectors are his men. He is the commissioner, the Roman pawn, the traitor who brokers the jobs for those who would sell their neighbors to feed the empire. Jesus entered Jericho and made his way through the town. There was a man there named Zacchaeus. He was one of the most influential Jews in the Roman tax collecting business, and he had become very rich. He tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowds. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree beside the road so he could watch from there.
Whew, what a day in this river city. At least there's some breathing room up here. Hey, watch that staff. Oh, gosh. Dadgum gentle dogs. Feast day, these crowds, they come get away with whatever they can get away with here. It's crazy. Now, where in this human throng would I find that Jesus? They say he's coming here today. He'd be in Jerusalem. He has to clearly walk this way if he's going to be here. They say he actually healed old Bartimaeus. You know, the guy that lives on the other side of town, he just healed him this morning, as a matter of fact. I'll just have to wait and see that with my own eyes. You know, if he's healed, he's going to have to get a real job. We're going to be watching. We're going to be making sure we get our taxes. And they say Matthew is traveling with him. One of his men, old Matthew. What would it take to make a man leave a lucrative booth like his in Capernaum, a highway booth, in fact, to follow a drifter like Jesus? I thought better of Matthew. How could he leave his security, his favor with the Romans, to follow a penniless preacher? One with a price on his head, as a matter of fact. I guess we'll see. But you know, there are days that I'd trade all this just to have one real friend.
When Jesus came by, he looked up at Zacchaeus and called him by name.
Zacchaeus, he said, quick, come down, for I must be a guest in your home today. Zacchaeus quickly climbed down and took Jesus to his house in great excitement and joy. The crowds were displeased. He has gone to be the guest of a notorious sinner, they grumbled.
Me? Me? You mean me? I'd be honored to have you at my table. I live this way. It's not far.
Meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, I will give half my wealth to the poor, Lord, and if I have overcharged people on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much. Jesus responded, salvation has come to this home today, for this man has shown himself to be a son of Abraham, and I, the Son of Man, have come to seek and save those like him who are lost.
Salvation. Salvation. Imagine a sinful man like me finding salvation in one short afternoon. I can't believe I promised all that. I mean, about giving away half my wealth and paying back what I overcharge folks. Four times what I owed, what I overcharged? Okay, I'll do it. I'll do just what I said. This Jesus, I think he made an honest man out of me today. I guess I was one of those lost ones he came to seek and save. But I'll bet I'm the only one he shook out of a tree.
To take a safe course with this passage about Zacchaeus, we could talk about being small and how we can relate to that. We could remember what it's like to be a child and how overwhelming it can be to be in a big people's world. We could talk about ways that we feel small as adults. When life throws you a killer curveball and once again you feel little, vulnerable, and recognize that you are not in control. At least not as much as you thought you were. But I don't really think that that is Luke's aim in sharing this story. I think instead it calls us and challenges us to get out of our comfort zones. I think instead we need to remember how Zacchaeus was viewed by those around him, by his neighbors, fellow tribesmen, and by complete strangers. He was known as a traitor, one who worked for the enemy, the dastardly people who had conquered and ruled their land. He was known as a cheat, one who exploited his position for personal wealth when he might just as easily have played fair or even worked a little Robin Hood action and helped the poor at the government's expense. But alas, no. Zacchaeus was looked upon with disfavor, disdain, and disrespect. He was the kind of person that when you saw him coming, you crossed to the other side of the street, or tried not to make eye contact. Or, being of Mediterranean descent, you might just walk right up and spit on him. He was the kind you avoided. Hoped he never encroached upon your world and the places in it that you inhabit. He was, as the scriptures say, a notorious sinner. Wow. Notorious. Not just your run-of-the-mill average variety sinner. He was a despicable deviant. So why does Luke tell his story? I think Luke shares with us the story of this weaselly little man for two reasons. The first is to point out that the power of God's love and the redemption offered in Jesus Christ is greater than any sin. God's love can conquer all. Look what happened to Zacchaeus after just one afternoon with Jesus. He repents, he is transformed, and seeks to right the wrongs that he knows he has committed. He's even willing to stipulate that there may be wrongs that he's not aware of, and he'll make amends for those too. His life does a 180 through the power and presence of Jesus. No one is too far gone for the grace of God. I think the second reason that Luke shares this story is for us, the well-mannered, respectable church folk who may hate to ever admit it, but we are guilty of the sin of quality control. There are people who frighten us, who, when we see them, avert our glance so as not to make eye contact. I remember a sociology class I had in undergrad at TCU. It was titled American Minority Groups, and it was taught by Professor Morrison Wong, a Chinese American who was born and raised in Bakersfield, California. I was always puzzled by the fact that he was born and raised in the U.S., and yet he spoke with a Chinese accent. It wasn't until years later that I realized that was because he learned to speak from those around him. In his infancy and childhood, he was raised in a population of immigrants. And so that was the form of English he learned. Just as I was raised in Texas, around people with Texas accents, and so that is the form of English that I learned. At any rate, this class was comprised of a truly diverse group of students, diverse in age, gender, ethnicity. I remember one conversation when a young African-American male student was sharing with us his life experience. He told us that whenever he went into a store at a mall or a shopping center, he was watched very closely, sometimes even followed around the store. He said that on sidewalks, white women would often put their hand over their purse when they saw him. He even had an experience of racial profiling with the Fort Worth Police Department. His experience was wholly other and different from mine, but I was saddened by the pain in his voice as he told us his story. He knew that some people were afraid of him for no other reason than the color of his skin. Now, maybe you can sit comfortably and say, well, that's not me. I would never do that. And maybe you're right. But who is it that you do avoid? What kind of people do you not invite to church? Be honest now, if not with me, at least with yourself. I first met Alice when we began our Saturday night contemporary service. It was small, and she felt more comfortable with small groups of people. I knew right away that there was something different about Alice, but I wasn't sure what. It took her very little time to open up and tell me that she was a paranoid schizophrenic, that she heard voices and struggled with trying to keep those under control. I was at first taken aback and a little scared. But then as the Saturdays went on, and the more I got to know Alice, I learned of how her daughters avoided her. They wouldn't come to visit and bring the grandchildren. How they almost never invited her to come visit them. She was so lonely. Sometimes she would call me up in my office, and she could only think of a thing or two to say, so I had to carry both ends of the conversation. Now, not everyone could do that, but you know me. God blessed me with the gift of gab. So I would talk to her for a time, and at some point I would have to end the conversation. But I knew that even just the sound of another person's voice talking to her over the phone was contact. It made her feel connected and valued. Luke reminds us through the story of this little man named Zacchaeus that quality control is God's job, not ours. Jesus said he came to seek and save the lost. We're not lost. We're here. Oh, sure, when we encounter those curveballs in life, we may feel a little lost, but that's only for a while. We reconnect with God. We're regrounded and strengthened by our faith. Luke calls us to step outside of our comfort zone, to ask ourselves, who are the people that we avoid? Who are the ones that we don't invite to church? And if we are to be the followers of Jesus, then these are exactly the folks that we are to invite. People like my classmate, like Zacchaeus, and like Alice, the different, the notorious sinner, the lonely. For each is made in the image and likeness of God. If only we have the eyes and take the time to see. They're just like you and me.